Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
I want to talk to you today about seeds. Yes, seeds. Working on this, I was curious, so I Googled seeds. I discovered that a surprising number of comedians talk about seeds. Gary Goldman has a bit on seedless grapes. He says, seedless grapes. I've lived long enough that I know what I want, and I know what I don't want. I want seedless grapes. There may be some young daredevils who want to deal with a choking hazard. Not me. I want my grapes seedless. And then Jerry Seinfeld, turns out he has a bit on seeds, on seedless watermelons. He says, I'm very impressed with this seedless watermelon product they have for us. What are they planting to get these seedless watermelon? What kind of scientists do this kind of work? I read it took 15 years of development. Other scientists devote themselves to AIDS, cancer, heart disease. These scientists, no, I will devote myself to melon. Sure, people are dying needlessly, but this has to stop. We need to devote our time, all our time, to these studies. And then one of my favorite comedians, Mitch Hedberg, he talks about sesame seeds. He says, I think they could take sesame seeds off the market, and I wouldn't even care. I can't imagine 5 years from now saying, remember sesame seeds? What happened? All the buns are blank. They're going to have to change the McDonald's song. Two off beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a bun. A bun. So I want to tell you about seeds, but not a comedy bit. It's actually a life-changing principle that we learn in the Bible. It's been called the law of the seed. The law of the seed. The idea is that because of Jesus, life follows death, not the other way around. Because of Jesus, life follows death, not the other way around. Jesus taught this, for instance, in John chapter 12. We're going to put all the Bible verses on the screen for you today. If you don't own a Bible, like at home, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar. I'd love to give you a Bible today. John chapter 12, starting in verse 23. So Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man, that's him, to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. So Jesus teaches us that life follows death, not the other way around. One way to understand this is by talking about the agricultural revolution, because that's something we all understand and talk about a lot. I know you spent your weekend, right, talking about the agricultural revolution. Basically, what happened is people learned to plant seeds. There was a time way back when a person found a seed and realized that it wasn't a little rock, and so he stuck in his mouth and it tasted okay. Maybe he took it out of a sunflower or a pumpkin. And so for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, people would go out searching for seeds and collecting them, and then they would eat the seeds. Now, we occasionally still eat seeds today, maybe like at baseball games, but not very much. Back then, man, people would come in like with a bucket of seeds and everyone would get excited. It would be a feast. They would eat all the seeds. But one day, this guy took seeds and he put them in soil and he covered the seeds up with some soil. And his friend was like, hey, why are you getting my food dirty? But this guy was like, just watch, watch. Keep watching. Keep watching. And finally, after a while, some green things started to sprout up. And the friend wanted to grab them and eat them. But the guy's like, no. Trust me. Keep watching. Keep watching. And then pumpkins were there. And the friend was like, whoa, these have more seeds than I could ever imagine. And the guy was like, no, bonehead, quit eating the seeds. We're going to eat pumpkins. And every time we eat a pumpkin, we're going to plant the seeds and we'll get more pumpkins. And so from this guy and his bonehead friend started this amazing revolution all over the world as people started whispering to each other, quit eating the seeds. That is so like BC 3000. We don't eat the seeds anymore. We plant the seeds now and we water them and we fertilize them. And when the seed dies, when our food dies, we end up with more food than we could possibly imagine. And it turns out the more food we kill by putting it in the ground, the more food we get in return. And so in that passage we just looked at, Jesus is saying, hey, what's true in nature is also true in life spiritually. The law of the seed. Life follows death, not the other way around. If you die, then you'll live. But if you try to force life, you will slowly deteriorate and die. And so each and every day we need to choose death. Now, to be clear, this is not talking about when you stop breathing and your heart and brain shut down and we'd say you're deceased. This principle is also true because of Jesus then, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a daily death. Every day, which allows us to really live. By the way, it's interesting. We didn't know this back in Bible times, but for years now, social scientists, researchers have proven that this is true. There are happiness researchers who tell us people who live for their own happiness are the least happy people, and people who live for God and others are the most happy people. And so year after year, they're proving what Jesus taught a long time ago. We choose to die to ourselves, death to selfie, and then we really live. And so we choose to die, for instance, to our selfish desires. I mean, really, our whole lives tend to be about us. You know, it's about me getting what I want, doing what I want, getting more stuff for me. It's all about me. And here's Jesus saying, hey, you can live that way, but it's not real life. And it leads to death. So here's a better choice. Choose death. Choose to die to your selfish desires. Put God and other people first. Serve them. Choose death. And then you'll experience real life. We choose to die to our selfish desires. We also choose to die to our sin. I think the reason we sin is because deep down, we're sure that it will make us happy. It's like, that's going to make me happy. This thing, which we know is wrong and it's illicit, we think it will bring us life. But it's not until we die to that which we thought would make us happy that we finally find life for the first time. It's the law of the seed. Life follows death, not the other way around. If you die, then you live. We also choose to die to our control. Our control. And this is actually the main thing I want to talk about today. I want to look at a moment in human history that is absolutely foundational to faith. It's with a guy named Abraham, who is considered the father of faith by Jewish people, by Muslims, and by Christians. Basically, almost everybody in the world would say he's the father of our faith. Why is he so important to so many people? We're going to see it's because he was willing to die to himself so he could live for God. He was willing to die to control. So this Abraham was originally named Abram, and he had a good life, good family. He was doing really well financially. And then one day God spoke to him in Genesis chapter 12. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you, and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. Did you notice that God asked him to move, but did not tell him where he was moving to? But Abram does. He says yes. And really, this is the core of faith, to believe in a personal God who wants to be in relationship with me and lead me and to obey when he calls me. That's the core of faith. There's another place in the Bible that describes what's happening here with Abraham. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8 says, "It was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land that God would give him as his inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going." He obeyed even though there was no reason to obey, except that's what God called him to do. I mean, for Abraham, the best thing was to stay. Right? Everything he had, everyone he knew was right where he was, but he left. Why? He was willing to die to himself so he could really live for God. Now, he could have asked. He could have said, "God, where are you sending me?" But that wouldn't have been faith. That would have been Abram trying to hold on to at least some semblance of control. But he didn't. He was willing to give up control because he was willing to trust God. And that's what we've been called to as well, to move beyond just believing in God to a place of really having faith. Faith that trusts God and therefore is willing to obey whatever he calls us to. A faith that says, "God, I trust you, and so you can do with me whatever you want." A faith that's willing to die to control. There's a book called The Screwtape Letters. Screwtape Letters. The author, C.S. Lewis, he imagines in this book a senior demon training younger demons on how to tempt people so that they never live the lives that they should live. In one part, the senior demon explains that humans will almost never pray the one thing that God really wants them to pray. "Not my will, but yours be done." The senior demon says they don't pray that. Instead, they just pray that God will help them through their struggles. The demon explains that people don't experience real life with God because they persist in wrapping their anxious hands around life's steering wheel as if it's going to work this time if I only clutch it more tightly. Abraham was willing to let go of the steering wheel. He was willing to die to control because he trusted God. And that's what faith is. Faith is doing what God has asked us to do, even if you don't have all the details. Even if it just doesn't make sense. Even if you're afraid. Even if you would rather stay in control. I mean, of course we'd rather stay in control, right? It is much easier to trust ourselves than it is to trust God. And what I wonder is, where do you find yourself trying to stay in control instead of trusting God? Maybe there's something you feel like God's calling you to do, but it would involve changing careers or making less money, and that does not appeal to you. That scares you. Or God said not to have sex until you're married, but there is no reason to obey that, except that it is what God called you to do. Or maybe you know that God's called you to share your faith with people who don't believe, but man, that really makes you nervous and it scares you, and the other people probably don't even want to hear about that. I want to talk about two of the areas that I think for most of us are most tempting to leave God out of. Two areas where it's so easy to not trust God, to not obey him, to refuse to do what he calls us to, and instead to stay in control. Okay? One area that we can easily leave God out of and try to control ourselves is our finances, our money. And I think probably that's a struggle for a lot of us. I know it's a temptation for me. I find myself worrying about money. Are we going to have enough? How are we going to pay for the kids' college? What about when we're older and we have to retire? And just like you, I have a certain amount of income and a certain amount of bills to pay. And honestly, I may have a few extra factors that make it even a little extra challenging to trust God and give up control of my finances. I decided, like, the day I became a Christian, I was 20 years old, that I would give God a minimum of 10% of every single dollar I brought in for the rest of my life, because he says so. God tells us to. He tells us every dollar you bring in is actually his money. He's letting you use it. And he says, I want the first 10% back. And I just decided I'm not going to refuse to do what God says. So I'm going to obey him. So I started giving him 10% 27 years ago. And I've given him at least 10% of every dollar ever since. But I also decided way back then, I don't want to stay there. I want to keep increasing that percentage. And so I have over the years. One of my goals was I want to make the amount that I give to God every month the biggest amount I give to anything. And so I reached that goal several years ago. So, like, I give more to God than to my mortgage or anything else. So when I get my paycheck, I've got a certain amount of income, a certain amount of bills, but I know a big chunk of my income is not going towards my bills. I'm giving it back to God. Another stress factor for me financially is that I have to raise my own salary. Pastors get paid by the offerings in their church, but that's not the situation that we are in yet at Verve. Our offerings are not there, and so instead of getting paid through the offerings as other pastors do, I have to go out and ask other people in other churches if they will give so that I can have a salary. And then another factor is, as a pastor, I will not get any retirement and I will not get Social Security, so it's really easy to worry about what's going to happen when we're old. So this is an area that I'm tempted to control, to not trust God, but trust myself, to always be thinking, but like, who else can I ask for money? How can I make a little bit of extra money to make sure we have enough? It's tempting to think, man, anyone who's in my position with my circumstances would feel this way, would have these temptations. One of the heroes of the faith for many people, including me, is named George Muller, hero. George Muller was born in Prussia in 1805, and he grew up stealing and lying. In fact, it was so bad he got sent away to boarding school. When he was in college, he got invited to a Bible study, and he went to this Bible study planning on making fun of all these weak-minded people who need to believe in God. But he actually ended up coming to faith. And when he came to faith, he was all in. And he ended up going into ministry. And over the years, check this out, he started a Bible college, a seminary called the Scriptural Knowledge Institute, to prepare people for ministry and to distribute Bibles. And over the course of Muller's leadership of that Bible college, they had 121,683 students and distributed almost 2 million Bibles. He also started orphanages. In fact, George Muller is called the father of the orphans because he started a movement of orphanages. Over the course of Muller's leadership, his orphanages had over 10,000 kids. He also started 117 schools that gave an education to over 120,000 children, many of them orphans. And then at the age of 70, he decided to become a missionary. And for the next 17 years of his life, he traveled all around the world sharing Jesus. And incredibly, the whole time, he also raised lots of money for and gave tons away to other missions and other missionaries. Many people would say that he lived one of the most amazing lives for God ever. One of the most productive, world-changing lives for God ever. Now, I am obviously not remotely in his league. I've started two churches that have helped a couple thousand people. He started many, many things that helped hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. I'm not in his league at all, but still, I hear about him and I think, well, he would understand. Right? He would understand the stress, the financial stress of being in ministry and having not getting paid, and so you have to figure out how to raise your own salary, and you have to also raise money for your ministry. He would understand why it can be tempting to want to kind of grab back the steering wheel and take back control of your own finances. Well, no, actually, he didn't. He wouldn't. Here's what George Muller is probably most famous for. He decided when he became a Christian and he started all these ministries that he would never ask anyone for money, that he would only ask God. He read some Bible verses that led him to the conclusion that he would not try at all to control his finances, but instead he would just fully trust God. Here's the Bible verses he would point to. Matthew 6 says, "That is why I tell," Jesus says, "That is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food and drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or food in barns, for your heavenly Father feeds them. And aren't you far more valuable to him than they are?" Matthew 7, verse 7, Jesus says, "Keep on asking, and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be opened to you." In John chapter 14, verses 13 and 14, Jesus says, "You can ask for anything in my name, and I will do it, so that the Son can bring glory to the Father. Yes, ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it." George Muller took these verses literally. Early in his ministry, he committed himself to trusting God for every financial need for all of his ministries. He decided to make his needs known only to his heavenly Father. Now, God does not require that, but even still, Muller just decided he was going to live that way, that he wouldn't ask anyone for money except for God, and he would also give lots of the money that was brought in away, and he did. He gave away a lot. And George Muller experienced one financial miracle after another. The expenses for his ministries were endless, but George Muller knew that all the resources of heaven and of earth belonged to God. Someone wrote of him, "George had such confidence and trust in the Lord that he counted his requests as good as accomplished when he prayed. He often thanked God for the sum as though already in hand." Muller himself wrote this. He said, "From the moment I asked until the Lord granted it fully, I never doubted that he would give every shilling of that sum. Often I praised him in the assurance that he would grant my request." So he had so given up control, he never asked anyone but God for money. And he so trusted God that he thanked God as soon as he asked him, even before God answered the prayer. Through his many years of ministry, Muller kept a record of all of his ministry's financial needs and of the requests he made of God and of the answers. The numbers are staggering. For just one example, the finances God brought to the Scriptural Knowledge Institute as an answer to his prayers totaled about 1.5 million pounds. That was in the early 1800s. Today, that would be equal to $180 million. $180 million. And that's just for the seminary. Sorry, that's not the orphanages and the schools and the churches. It's crazy. Crazy how God answered his prayers. But to me, even more crazy is how he instead of stressing and trying to control things, he gave up control and he trusted. And I ask, how? How did he do it? Well, someone asked him that once, and here's what he said. "There was a day when I died, utterly died. I died to George Muller, his opinions, his preferences, his tastes, and his will. Died to the approval or blame even of my brethren and friends. And since then, I have studied only to show myself approved unto God." George Muller was an ordinary guy, just like you or me, but he lived an extraordinary life. Why? Death to selfie. He died to himself, and he discovered that life follows death, not the other way around. But what would it look like for you to give up control over your finances? What would you do different with your money if you really believed in God? If you really believed and were willing to give up control? You know, at the end of every year, every church, including ours, sends out a giving statement. It's a record of how much you gave in the previous year. You get it in January, and you can use that for that statement for tax purposes, because all of your gifts to a church are tax exempt. But listen, that giving statement that you get in January, that is not just a record of how much you gave. It is a record, this is how I view it every year, of how much you trusted God that year. How much did I really trust God? How much were you willing to die to control of your finances? How much were you willing to obey God and give Him control of your finances? It's scary. I know it's scary to do what God says with our money. But if you give up control, if you're willing to die to yourself, you will discover, as George Mueller did and as I have, that life follows death, not the other way around. Another area we can leave God out of, I think, for a lot of us, it's tempting to try to control, is our time. Our time. So I know for me, I can't speak for you, for me, I feel like because of the nature of my job, I give away a lot of my time. So I have this temptation to feel like the rest of my time is mine. Like I get to control that part of my time. So like I work at least 5, usually 6 days a week. I work at least 3, usually 4 nights a week. My wife works 2 nights a week. So Wednesday is the only weekday night that we have as a family, the only night we even see each other. And so it's like, well, that night's our time. I get to control that. Well, our church just adopted a housing project called Marble Manor, which is in a really bad part of town. Lots of poverty, lots of crime, lots of kids growing up in a really hard place, and not a lot of people caring, doing anything about it. And so our church said, hey, we'll help. We will help. And the Las Vegas Housing Authority has given us use of the community center right in the middle of Marble Manor. Speaking of, quick commercial, we need to stock that community center. So we're doing this year as our like Christmas generosity project. In the past, we've gotten presents for kids in schools and stuff. This year, what we're doing is we made an Amazon wish list of the things that we need. It's like crayons and markers and paper and snacks, and there's some storage units. The items range from $3 to $50. Would you please go to vivalaverve.org/mm. You can think of the candy, but it means Marble Manor. vivalaverve.org/mm, and that will take you directly to this Amazon wish list page of all the stuff that we need for the community center. And if you could order an item or two or 10, and then you could either just put to have them delivered here to Verve and we'll bring them over, or you can have them delivered to your house, bring them in, and then we'll bring them over. Anyway, every Wednesday from 5:30 to 7, we are opening up the community center, and kids from the project come, and you help them with their homework, and you play some games, and you do some activities. And my family thought, man, that would be a really cool thing for us to do, but it's on Wednesday nights. Wednesday night is the one night, it's like our night. Like that's the night that we protect that night. We control that night. But we decided, no, God has called his people to serve, and let's do what God has called us to do. We'll give up that night once a month. That's what we're asking people to do. Just go once a month. There's like a rotation, and so you go once a month. We went this last Wednesday night, and so it's the night that we gave up our family night. And I will tell you this. It was the best family night that we have had in years. And instead of just sitting around and watching TV or whatever, like we got to invest in kids' lives. I got to watch my daughter do that. Like we made a difference with people. It was the best family night we've had in years. Why was it such a great family night? Because we were willing to die to ourselves. And turns out life follows death, not the other way around. Do you know that God has called you to volunteer in your church? He actually talks about that a lot in the Bible, that the church is a family and that everyone is supposed to be contributing. We all have a part to play. He's given us each talents and abilities to contribute to his church. And I think everyone wants that. Like my belief is, I think, who doesn't want to make a difference? We all do, right? The problem is, it takes time. And we're busy. We don't feel like we have time. We want to control our time. And so we have to answer this question. Am I willing to trust God? Am I willing to die to control of my time and give control of my time to God and do what he says? we would love to have you start volunteering here at Verve. Maybe in our children's or student ministry where you get to volunteer with kids, or on our tech team. They're the people back there right now running this service, or our host team, the smiling faces that greet you when you come in, or the frontline team, these heroes who come in early and in the behind the scenes are preparing coffee and communion. It could be serving with the homeless on Tuesday afternoons, or hanging out with the kids at Marble Manor on Wednesday evenings. We would love to have you start volunteering here at Verve. Not because we need more volunteers. Do we need more volunteers? Yes, we do need more volunteers. But honestly, it's not because we need more volunteers. It's because God has called you to volunteer. And we all need to do what God has called us to do, because that's how we find life. That it's not a sacrifice, right? It's a death that brings life. And so I'll just say, if you want to start volunteering, you can sign up today. And what we'll do is we'll get you started in January. We realize December's a crazy time, and that's a hard time to start something new. And so if you sign up today, it's not like this week. It's like, no, we'll get you started in January with a new year. And if you want to start volunteering, you can let us know through the connection card that was on your seat, or you can also let us know. There's a page on the website or on the Verve app that you can use to let us know that. So I mean, honestly, the question that we all have to answer is, do I really want to live? Do I want to experience real life? Am I willing to die to myself so I can? Can I really trust God? That if I open my hands and stop trying to control my life, He has something better to give me. He does. He really does. He wants to fill your life with better things. But to experience it, you have to die to selfie. It's the law of the seed. Life follows death, not the other way around. We're going to give you some time to think about all this, to decide how you're going to apply it to your life, because that's what it's about, right? It's not about hearing the message. It's not about believing the message, agreeing with the message. It's about living the message. Okay, and so we're going to give you some time to do that. During this time, our band's going to play one more song, and we also have communion available. It's on the candlelit tables around the room. It's a piece of bread and a cup of juice that remind us that this principle Jesus taught us, He didn't just teach it, He applied it to Himself when He died for us on the cross. And then 3 days later, life followed death, not the other way around. And so in communion, we remember Jesus' sacrifice and we thank Him for it, and we commit ourselves to living a life of sacrifice for Him. So if you'd like to take communion, you're welcome to do that during the song. You can get it and bring it back to your seat. So let me pray for you, and then we'll give you some time to pray on your own. Because this is, I think this is hard. It's challenging. It is for me. I know that as committed as I am to giving up control, as committed as I am to giving up control of my finances and dying to wanting to just use them for me and instead giving them back to You, as committed as I might be to giving my time to You, it is a never-ending struggle. There's always temptations to worry, to think, what am I doing, to want to grab back some of the control, to think there's some easier way to experience life. So my prayer, God, is that You would trust us, that we would trust You, that we would believe Jesus when He says, hey, unless a kernel falls into the ground, unless you're willing to die, life will not spring up. God, help us to give up control. Help us to die to ourselves and to trust You so that we might really live. We thank You that Jesus died so that we could really live. We pray all these things in His name. Amen.